This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There are over 200 co-housing communities in some stage of development across the country. Given that, you'd think that co-housing would be a familiar term. Well, at least to me, it was not, so we decided to take a look at it. Turns out co-housing is a type of intentional, collaborative housing in which residents actively participate in the design and operation of their neighborhood. In Charlotte, one of these communities is in the planning stage, which gives us an opportunity to better understand what some describe as not just a new way to design neighborhoods, but a state of mind. Alice Alexander is Executive Director of the Co-Housing Association, the National Co-Housing Organization, and a founder of Durham Central Park Community in Durham, North Carolina. She joins us by phone. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
And with us in our Spirit Square studio are Myra Brisk and Walter Charnley. Ms. Brisk is initiator and coordinator of the Charlotte Co-Housing Initiative. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
And Mr. Charnley is the first founding member of Jubilee Co-Housing in Floyd, Virginia. You drove all the way down from Floyd to be with us, did you?
I'm here every week, Mike.
Are you really?
Yep.
I won't ask why.
Okay, thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. Let me start with you, Alice, with the definition. To the definition that I used in the opening, I think, came from your organization. It describes co-housing as a type of intentional, collaborative housing in which residents actively participate in the design and operation of their neighborhoods. And then it goes on to say that co-housing provides the privacy we are accustomed to within the community we seek. What does that all mean?
Yeah, that does sound a little academic. If you just think about co-housing as being a great blend of privacy and community, we all have our own private homes, but we share abundant common facilities like a common house that would include a common kitchen, perhaps a game room, a child's playroom, sometimes laundry facilities. And we also enjoy living together as a community, and that may mean that we share occasional meals, we support each other, and we have a lot of fun.
Okay. Let me ask about another term that I read yesterday, and that is intentional community. What's the difference? Because it sounds like if you're coming together to live privately and communally, so to speak, that's intentional. So is there a difference between those two things?
Intentional community is a term that can, it's the intentional community aspect of co-housing means that we're committed to living together in community. And how that translates is that we are committed to caring for each other. Now, that can take different levels of care. We decide as a group, for example, how involved we want to be. Caring can be the full spectrum of we may be an intergenerational community that enjoys children, and we may decide as a group that we will all watch out for those children when they are playing in the interior of the community. We may be committed when one of our members has an accident and may break an arm, committed to helping that person get back on their feet. So it's also very much a choice in terms of how active you want to be. So we make those decisions.
Walter Charnley, what led you to start the community in Floyd, Virginia, Jubilee?
Well, I'd been interested in intentional communities since I was very, very young. I'd visited a number of them, read about lots of them, had never seen a model that I felt compelled to join, certainly not compelled to try to emulate in starting. When we moved up to Floyd 15 years ago and happenstance to buy a piece of property with a lot of land, friends of mine in Charlotte asked if I was going to start a commune, which was sort of what intentional communities were back then. And communes, for most people, were a bunch of hippies getting together and throwing up some housing and living together, and which didn't appeal to me. But then, having lived in Floyd for a number of years, I heard about co-housing. And as soon as I heard about this model, it seemed like this would be a perfect fit for myself, my family, and other families, and would be a perfect fit for our location in Floyd.
I had never heard of this, Myra, and you're the initiator. You're described as the initiator of the Charlotte Co-Housing Initiative. How did you hear about it?
I actually went to school originally up in Oberlin College.
Uh-huh.
It's very common up there. In fact, it's a there are a lot of food co-ops, living cooperatives, not co-housing per se, but other cooperative type and intentional communities, if you will. So that's an umbrella term that encompasses a wide range of different living situations or working situations where people come together intentionally.
Mm-hmm. And you are described, as I said, as the initiator,
right,
and the coordinator. As the initiator, are you really the brains behind all of this in Charlotte? Are you the one that said, let's do this, and you're the one that's spearheading the effort to get it off the ground?
Well, it's to kind of a multifold answer to that. So first of all, it always takes at least one person to stand up and hold the flag, if you will, saying, you know, yes, let's do this. At the same time, in places where it's new, such as Charlotte, it often has multiple starts. So that's what happened here in Charlotte. About a couple years ago, there was a fellow, Roger Groswald, that started the initiative originally.
Mm-hmm.
He has a piece of land that he wanted to try doing co-housing on. So he's been familiar with the idea for many years. They actually went through quite a process, got some partners, collected, you know, sent out the word via meetup groups, and other social media networks to let people know that, you know, he had this plan and this vision to create co-housing on that particular land.
Mm-hmm.
He actually met with the city. Ultimately, it didn't work out, and the momentum wasn't built around that particular vision at that time.
So where are you in your process today?
Right. So when that process particularly, you know, kind of was let go and he let that vision and stepped aside as the organizer in December, there was a message that was sent out saying, hey, all we need is an organizer to keep this going.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I stepped up in January. We've been meeting since then for, you know, regularly, about every couple weeks now since January, and have gained quite a lot of momentum. We have a group of about 10 people, committed members at this point, and committed to continuing to grow and spread the word.
And we'll talk about what that means,
yep,
in a little while here. Walter Charnley, when did Floyd, Virginia's co-housing opportunity begin?
We started Floyd Co-Housing as an LLC in 2007. So we've been working on this for a good while, which is not unusual.
Is it up and running?
No. We have just finished almost our design phase. This is an important part of members creating their own community.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working with a builder designer to create a passive house constructed co-housing community. And since August, we've had 5 design sessions in which we've formulated our site plan, the plan for our common house, and the plan for the individual unit. So we're very far along in that sense. Our next step is gaining enough more members to go and have the financial wherewithal to look for construction financing.
So, Alice, I said at the beginning that there are about 200 of these communities in various stages of planning, development, and actualization around the country right now. How many of them are actually up and running? People are living there, doing what they wanted to do when they got the idea to do it in the first place, Alice?
Well, I would encourage your listeners to go to cohousing.org, and we have lots of information on our website. And under our co-housing directory, we show that there are 152 established communities.
Mm-hmm.
Of that, 129 are complete, and 23 are classified as building, and that means there are typically resident members, but they haven't finished completing the community. So we do have over 150. We also have 22 groups, who own land and are waiting to break ground. And we have almost 100 other groups that are forming around the country.
Does there seem to be a particular part of the country where this has caught on more quickly or more fervently than other parts of the country?
Yes, and it does tend to be most common on the coasts. We are in the southeast, and I'm very proud to say in Durham, Chapel Hill area, we have a robust community of six co-housing communities, but nothing east. And we have a few in Asheville, and I'm loving that we have one going on in Charlotte. But otherwise, we don't have a whole lot in the southeast, so we have a lot of education to do. It's really a marvelous housing and lifestyle choice for people today.
So we have two founders here. Alice, you founded Durham Central Park Community. Walter, you're in the process of putting together the one in Floyd, Virginia, called Jubilee. How do you find like-minded people? First of all, it's a new concept to a lot of people. How do you introduce them to that concept? How do you get them to wrap their heads around what you're trying to accomplish here? And how do you get everybody on the same page? Because that's what it requires.
I'd love to. Yes, that is a challenge because, as Walter mentioned, a lot of people jump to, oh, I'm not ready for a commune, and I would share, I'm not ready either. So I think co-housing really helps crack the nut of intentional community when people are still a little concerned about their privacy. We have plenty of privacy, and we have the benefit of abundant community. So it's a great blend. We did a lot of education in the community at the farmers market. And here's a quick little story to share the evolution. When we were meeting at the farmers market and people would come up and say, well, tell me the square footage or, get back to me when you start to build. What we would educate people on is that this is a process, and we want you to be part of this process, decide where we live, decide how we're going to live, decide how the facility will best meet our needs. And so we had to do a lot of education.
But Alice, it strikes me that unless you have a bunch of people who already know you, like you, understand you, want to be part of what you see as a vision, that really what you're going to be dealing with here is a bunch of strangers. So strangers are, I would think, naturally suspicious of each other, at least at the beginning. Myra, you keep raising your hand. How do you get them to come together, be on the same page, look down the same road, see the same vision, buy into what you're talking about? Because this is, after all, real estate.
Well, that is a great question. There's a number of ways to answer that. One is that it is a self-selecting process. People who feel and are attracted to a similar vision, I have found through the experience so far that I've been working on this, as well as through hearing other people in their experience, that the people naturally are drawn together, you know, who hold a similar vision. That is the experience here in Charlotte. Additionally, when you're getting together around this topic, I found within one or two meetings of people, they're not strangers anymore.
Okay.
These become immediate friends. That's my interpretation, my feeling on it. I wasn't, as soon as
do you have people who come to the meetings, the initial meetings, and you never see them again, and some come back for the secondary and tertiary meetings? Is that what happens?
Yes.
So some people realize right away, this is not for me. Other people are intrigued by it, want to hear more about it, want to get more involved in the planning process of it. We're going to go down that road as we go through the hour here with Alice Alexander, who's the Executive Director of Co-Housing Association. That's a national organization, and she's also the founder of the Durham Central Park Co-Housing Community. Walter Charnley is with us from Floyd, Virginia, where he has the Jubilee Co-Housing Community, and Myra Brisk from the Charlotte Co-Housing Initiative. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Chesterbrook Academy, preparing children academically, socially, and emotionally for elementary school. Hosting an open house on Saturday, August 1st. Details at chesterbrookacademy.com. Well, for years, those in the know have referred to Belmont as a hidden gem. It's just down I-85 from Charlotte. Started as a railroad and textile hub in the late 1880s, but today is thriving with a burgeoning Main Street, restaurants, antique shops, nearby college. The Daniel Stowe Botanical Garden calls Belmont home. There's even talk of bringing trolley service back to Belmont. We're going to explore all that Belmont has to offer and the pluses and minuses of living in the shadow of Charlotte tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Jim Webb has been a U.S. Senator and Secretary of the Navy. He now has his eye on the White House. Former Senator Jim Webb on the future of the Democratic Party and his bid to be the 2016 Democratic nominee.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about co-housing this morning. It's a new concept to me, perhaps to you, but there will be a Charlotte co-housing event Saturday from 2 to 4 at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church on the Plaza, where you can explore this in more depth with Myra Brisk, Walter Charnley, and Alice Alexander. I'm not sure Alice will be here, but Myra will be here for that. Before Charlotte gets started on the Charlotte Co-Housing Initiative, I'm told that there have already been visions for additional communities like this around town. The old Eastland Mall site, I read, was mentioned as a possible site. There's an upcoming project by the Universal Institute of Successful Aging of the Carolinas for five of these villages around the city. You even point to the Brightwalk neighborhood, which we've talked about on this program, as a form of this concept. Are all these the same? Are they all in falling in line with what you have in mind?
No, they are variations on the theme and in different levels on the spectrum of what you could kind of loosely put under the umbrella of intentional communities. So as the, again, as the umbrella term for this. So each one is unique. The Brightwalk, for example, is, you know, I'd say more of a step towards more conscious development, you know, more integrative, collaborative, which is, you know, creative and allows for, you know, a more healthy neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But co-housing is a whole leap forward above that, where the people, the participants, the future residents actually create the neighborhood itself. And, you know, form a social structure, you know, social interactions where they agree upon.
Yeah, this sounds like you're building a society, which is where the hippie element, I think, of communes comes in. But it's not that.
In a sense, it's changing the way most people operate. In other words, with most co-housing communities, decisions are made by consensus. This is a really totally different way of deciding on things than most people in our society work on. So in other words, everyone has an equal voice. There isn't a group of people that can bring a majority rule into making decisions. It's everyone.
It's consensus.
It's consensus.
In this day and age, when nobody can agree on the color of the sky, okay, how do you reach consensus on something as important as the house that you've bought and chosen to live in, the community that you've chosen to be part of?
Exactly. And this is something we've worked on. Alice, you want to say something?
Yes, because I'm living in co-housing and spent several years developing. We got started in 2009, broke ground in 2012, and moved in 2014. I was one of those who thought, yeah, right, we're really going to be able to make decisions by consensus. That just doesn't work. Well, we had two people within our community who were Quakers, and they helped introduce the idea of consensus. And I have to tell you, it does take more patience. But it does work. Not only that, when you are working together as a team to build something, to build community, to get to know each other and trust each other, it is not onerous. In fact, it is a delight to go to a meeting and know that you're going to be heard, so there's mm-hmm. this comfort. It's no longer, I'm going to have to go in and steel myself and make sure people hear my thoughts and go my way. It's more of a feeling of I know I will get heard and looking forward to being persuaded by other people that you trust. So it's a very positive process.
How do you reach trust with a bunch of strangers who come together because they think this might be a good idea? I think I might want to live in this environment. You don't really know until you get into it, but how do you do that?
Well, one thing we've done, and our membership marketing committee's done a great job with putting together a new membership orientation, which involves getting people to understand the vision that we kind of originally developed, which was a vision of taking each person into account.
But you use the word we. And you are the initiator and the first founding member of Jubilee. So it wasn't a we, it was an I. It was my vision, your vision. So how does that become our vision?
Well, my vision was attached to the co-housing vision as a whole, which I began learning about through various writings and particularly the national co-housing website, cohousing.org. I can't say enough about the information you can find there. And it my vision, my own personal vision, is only based on the fact that I want to live in a co-housing community.
Talk to me about the kinds of people you find who want to live like this. What kind of characteristics do they have in common?
A lot of the characteristics. Oh, go ahead, Alice.
Yeah, because this is a movement that's happening around the country, and I have to say that everybody comes at it perhaps with a little different perspective or why they're coming. But generally, there are three main reasons. Community, because we live and breathe best in relations with each other. Also, sustainability. A very common value among co-housers is lowering our carbon footprint. And what better way to do it than living in a co-housing community where you share one lawnmower. You don't have to have everybody have their own lawnmowers. Or in my hall, we have one vacuum cleaner. And also quality of life. When you have people who are watching out for you, suddenly you have to go to the airport quickly. You have a number of people you can say, I need some help here. That lowers your stress. And also increases your enjoyment of life when you can share. For example, I'm looking out my window and we have gardens. We may live urban, but we have this marvelous garden in our backyard. And there's nothing like sharing those kind of activities that just really increase your quality of life.
Let's talk about some nuts and bolts here. And let me begin with your one vacuum cleaner comment, because you just said living there lowers stress. Well, if you have one, and I don't know how big the community is or how many housing units there are, but if there's one vacuum cleaner and you need to vacuum or you want to vacuum, but somebody else is using the vacuum, doesn't that lead to stress?
Well, I have to share this. there's not too many times when there would be a need for that. But if there is, I mean, we discuss it. So here I have lived in community, and we were very concerned and knew that there was going to be some disappointments, and of course there's going to be conflict because that's life, relationship, and living in community can be messy sometimes. But it has not been a challenge. It has not been difficult when there's something that we both need, we discuss it.
So if there's one vacuum cleaner and one lawnmower, is there one blender? Is there one coffee maker? How do you decide? Where does the line draw between personal desires and possessions and communal desires and possessions?
This is something that we discuss and we figure it out as a community, what we want to share and what we need to have ourselves. There may be people in my community, we're all in one building, so it's very easy to go down to the hall closet and get a vacuum cleaner. So it may be that somebody wants to have their own vacuum cleaner in their own unit with their door shut while they vacuum. That's fine. That's their own decision. That's the beauty of this. There are no hard, fast rules. This is all about options. This is all about how to better our lives and live more softly on the earth and enjoy community.
Okay. You mentioned that you're living in all-in-one building, but that is not the case in every one of these communes. There are individual homes. Is that correct, Myra and Walter?
Sure. And there's a difference between urban co-housing and rural co-housing.
Okay.
We have 38 acres of land. Consequently, we're going to have more of a spread out community than Alice and Durham does. We're going to have clustered housing, which means the housing is going to be close together to help create more of a sense of community, but we will have individual units.
So how does this start? If there's nothing there yet, if you're trying to start this from the ground up, when you find like-minded individuals who want to be part of this, what do they have to bring to the table? Obviously, you have to buy land. You have to build buildings. You have to hire architects and planners and lay out streets and things like that. Where does this money come from?
It has to come from the individuals primarily. There are, you know, some instances where a community can attract someone who's independently wealthy that might be willing to, you know, kick in enough money to get things really rolling financially. In Europe, in Scandinavia, where co-housing started originally in Denmark, the government is actually subsidizing co-housing communities there because they've seen how beneficial to society as a whole these co-housing communities have become.
So if you're a founding member, and not just you, but the other people who come into this to form a community, and you build a house or houses or a single building and rent what is essentially a condominium or an apartment, I suppose, or buy a condominium or rent an apartment, you are the original people. People come and go. Desires and lifestyles change. You're buying into real estate? You're actually buying the property, or is it more of a co-op?
Well, it could be either. There are co-ops that are co-housing communities in the country. A lot of states aren't too familiar with banks. In different states aren't too familiar with financing co-ops, so that's a difficulty. Finding financing is somewhat of a difficulty for lots of communities. Jubilee's a little different in that we had land before we started creating the co-housing idea. And also another aspect of Jubilee that's a little different, we're going to build out all at once. Because we're building as a passive house community.
And what does that mean? You've said that twice, passive house.
Okay. I'm not a building expert, but basically what passive house is, it's a method of construction that was originated in Europe that's super insulated, okay, providing ultimately somewhere between 75 and 85% reduction in energy costs.
So because you're a passive house community, you were going to complete
because we're a passive house community, we want to build all at once because materials are specialized, and if we can buy all those materials at once, we'll have a tremendous savings and be able to pretty much build in the same price as conventional building.
What do you foresee, or what do the members that you've so far gathered, Myra, see for the Charlotte community?
Okay, great question. We're actually not at that stage yet. So that's the beauty of it. Anyone who joins in now gets to be in that process of co-creating that with us. Right now, we've been forming the foundation, the groundwork for this community, which has more to do with the actual social structure, the mission and vision and value statements, you know, that we all feel
strongly. Can you share some
strongly.
Of that?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I love, first of all, these quick statements that I'll read here are examples of collaboration, you know, a group of people, about almost 10 people coming together and creating this together, so which is a lot more than what one person could come up with on their own. So we, the forming group of Charlotte Co-Housing Community, share a desire to tap into the life-giving forces of community, to live in responsible harmony with the earth and each other, and to be a positive influence in our city. You know, then we have some more specifics.
Okay. So when you buy into this, do you actually own the home, or does the cooperative, the original group of people that come together to form the community, own the property?
It can vary depending on the community. In Floyd, we are developing as a condominium because of subdivision ordinances precluding clustered housing. We're going as a condominium.
But, if you come together as a community originally, people come and go. People die. People get jobs that have to transfer out. So new people have to come in to replace those people. How do you then find them? Can you, as if I own a piece of the cooperative of the community, can I sell it to anybody who comes knocking on the door? Do I call a real estate agent, have a put a sign in the front yard? How does it happen?
Again, that can vary a little bit, but
best.
Go ahead, Alice.
Yeah, because I'm representing helping to support co-housing communities all across the country, and different communities approach it in different ways. If you go on to cohousing.org, you'll see we have classified ads, and there are homes for sale in communities all over the country. People do come and go. I mean, things do happen, but there is much less of a transition in co-housing communities than you would see in the regular population.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is if it's difficult to find like-minded people, but so if you're fortunate enough to find them and you come together successfully and build these communities, if somebody leaves, somebody dies, and they have to be replaced, where do you find the new members? Can anybody buy in?
Yes.
Or do you have to go through some sort of process to make sure that you are in the mindset of the previous residents?
That's a great question. And the way most communities, healthy communities, respond is by having a waiting list. And those are community members that may come and join you at your meetings occasionally, or may come share potlucks with you. So we get to know those people so that when a house or a condo does go up for sale, there are going to be people out there in the wings who are interested. That said, I must stress that depending on what state you live or what the regulations are, we can't require somebody particular to move in. But nobody is going to want to move into a co-housing community unless you enjoy that kind of life and know what you're getting into.
But is this legally considered real estate?
Certainly, yes.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, because there are housing rules and regulations against discrimination in housing. How do you... Because you are discriminating. You actually want people to be like-minded. You want people to fit into the community. How do you get around HUD regulations?
We are not being discriminatory at all. What we have are people who are wanting to live in our communities. Mm-hmm. So it's not, that is not an issue. And I'm not exactly sure what the challenge is. And maybe, Walter, you can pipe in here.
Well, one of the things in Jubilee that we've discussed, and we will have a right of first refusal that our association will have. In other words, if someone wants to sell their home, we would hopefully, as Alice mentioned, have a waiting list in hand, and we would enable the seller to easily transition from selling their home and moving off, and having someone coming in that's familiar with Jubilee, familiar with co-housing, and going to be a good member.
And there's no problem with that legally?
No, there's no problem with having a right of first refusal. Now, if, you know, we could go down a path, Jubilee could not have any money to make that really happen, so we'd have, you know, it... But again, as Alice said, people are generally not going to want to move into a co-housing community that aren't both familiar with it and somewhat willing to be a part of that community.
That's Walter Charnley, first founding member of Jubilee Co-Housing in Floyd, Virginia. Also with us in our studio, Myra Brisk, initiator and coordinator of the Charlotte Co-Housing Initiative. And I believe we're losing Alice Alexander because I think she has another appointment to go to, but she's the executive director of Co-Housing Association. Give the web address quickly, Alice.
It's cohousing.org.
Okay, we're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Corkscrew Wine Shop and Bar, located at the Burkdale Village in Lake Norman, offering wines from around the world, live local music, and craft beer on tap. Relax, uncork, unwind. The Corkscrew. Details at thescrewcrew.com. Former Senator Jim Webb, a Democrat from Virginia, will be on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock to talk about the future of the Democratic Party and his bid to be the 2016 Democratic nominee. That's all upcoming on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or look for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we are coming right back.
Thank you. Your days are busy.
Work, school, errands, kids.
It never stops.
And the news never stops either.
You can keep up between Morning Edition and All Things Considered with Here and Now. Hi, it's Robin Young.
And Jeremy Hobson. Here and Now brings you breaking news, developing stories, the latest in the arts and innovation.
Asking tough questions, unpacking complex issues.
From across the country and around the world.
Join us 12 noon on Charlotte's NPR News Source, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about what to me is a new concept, co-housing. It sounds a little bit like a cross between a co-op, which you might find in a New York City condominium building, or where you have to go before a board of directors if you want to buy into the co-op, and they have to look at your financials, and they have to interview you about your life and your family and whether you have a dog and that sort of thing. But it's that, and it's also just a normal situation, and it depends really where and what development or what community you choose to live in this co-housing environment. We're talking with Walter Charnley, who's the first founding member of Jubilee co-housing in Floyd, Virginia, and Myra Brisk, who's the initiator and coordinator of a yet-to-be-built but in the planning stages Charlotte co-housing initiative. I want to get back to this housing and urban development rules and regulations where you can't discriminate in any way against somebody who wants to buy. But if you don't have a situation where you have a waiting list and you have somebody who comes in who just doesn't, not based on the color of their skin or where they came from or what language they speak, but they don't speak your language, they don't understand the meaning of what you're trying to accomplish, would they be prevented from coming in?
Well,
would they want to come in?
That's probably the real aspect of it that's important. I would think not. I mean, I wouldn't want to move into a community that I didn't feel was somewhat like-minded.
So does that make this risky from the point of view of a buyer who does want to come in but maybe 10 years down the road has to sell for whatever reason? May not be as easy to sell as a house in a suburb someplace.
Actually, what we're finding nationally is that co-housing communities are becoming more and more popular, and virtually all of them have either waiting lists or people that have been seeing how well that community's functioning. As I mentioned, in Scandinavia, the government is actually subsidizing co-housing communities because they've been working so well.
One of our listeners, Amy in Charlotte, wants you to talk a little bit more about the origins of co-housing in Europe, because she says the vacuum cleaner example isn't really representative. Think instead of sharing big-ticket expensive items like a stove for the community house, a swimming pool, a volleyball court. That's where co-housing becomes really dynamic. That's actually a two-pronged question. So let's talk more about the origins. Denmark and Scandinavia has more of a socialist outlook on life than we do in America. Does it fit better there than it does here?
Well, it started there. They were a little more, you know, leaning in that direction. But back in the 70s, a group of young families in Denmark who had young children and were trying to figure out how to make life a little less crazy for themselves decided to develop this sort of community. They retrofitted an apartment building, installed a play area for kids, common areas for meals, but also had all of their individual units as well. So it was a combination of maintaining their individual residences, but having these common facilities that helped bring about a sense of community and bring about a sense of sharing.
Well, when you talk about volleyball courts and swimming pools and clubhouses where you can have parties and where you can have gatherings and the neighborhood can have dinners where they throw for everybody, everybody does a potluck, it doesn't sound that much different from what major builders have been building for the last 30 years around Charlotte, communities with clubhouses and communal areas. What makes it different?
What makes it different is the people in those communities have actually developed them, designed them, developed the governance aspects of it all themselves, and they've become familiar with one another, and they are generally friends with one another. Of course, if you've got a community with 30, 35 residences, some of the members are going to be closer to others you've got a sense of community. You can have a subdevelopment in Charlotte where you've got 40, 50 houses in a common community room or community clubhouse, and virtually no one knows one another,
right.
You know? And yeah. In co-housing, it's different.
Myra?
The physical building is one important aspect of co-housing, very important. The built environment influences us more than we typically think about. But co-housing specifically is not just the built environment. It's also very importantly the social structure that gets created, the shared decision-making, the fact, like Walter just said, that people want to work together, come there specifically to work together, to make decisions and share things. So then you can allow for things like pools between, you know, 30 or so households where, you know, and the people actually own that together and decide, you know, how that is used or, you know, other amenities like that that, you know, an individual homeowner wouldn't have the funds to
But that's not unlike every other community with a housing, an HOA fee that they pay every month, and those monies go to upkeep the pool or the tennis courts or whatever the amenities the community may have. How is this different?
Well, I get back to the forming of the community. In other words, we have our membership community committee has really developed a method of talking to prospective members, getting them involved in the history of our particular co-housing community, Jubilee, and learning about how this is functioning and how people are working together to really form a community. As Myra said, it's more about the community than the housing itself.
There are important aspects of the physical environment that are different, however. For example, in a typical condominium or apartment or what have you, or housing complex, the parking lot will be or the main feature of that, or, you know, prominent, you know, everyone. So there's not a shared place where people actually interact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, yes, they might go to the pool together at the same time, but that doesn't mean they're interacting. That's different. You know, the garages are going to be central in a typical housing development, as opposed to in this situation, the parking lots or, house, you know, garages or what have you are going to be set aside to the side and allow for the green spaces and the actual front doors and the porches to be more prominent physical elements, and the houses closer together on purpose so that interactions actually happen, spontaneous, you know, communication and exchanges actually add to the community life.
Now, what about things? Everybody gets together before it starts and they decide what it's going to look like. And if you're lucky and you can find the financing, it happens. People move in, they begin their lives, they enjoy what you're talking about, they plan for this, that this is what they want, and it happens. But then they want to paint their house purple. Can they do that?
Well, in our instance, we and in most communities, you're going to have a set of bylaws. And these are required usually by the state, that you have bylaws that are going to influence what happens in the community. And usually those bylaws have to do with, in our situation, being a condominium, the outside of the buildings actually are common elements.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone wanted to paint the outside of their building, they'd certainly have to come and get permission from all the other residents.
But some of these places will be single-family homes or attached single-family, like duplexes or grouped together in courtyard kind of mm-hmm. situations, right?
And in those situations, you know, you would come to agreement with the community. And this is, you know, again, that consensus-making decision is important.
It's also a type of what could be called pocket neighborhood, which, you know, has, you know, so that's how you can visualize it. You know, like you said, centralized around a courtyard or other, you know, cluster. There's a number of differences. Two things I'd just like to add here. One is come and meet us. Come and, you know, visit a co-housing community. You will immediately know the difference. It's not a typical housing situation that you see out in the world at large. It feels very different. You know, there are plenty of examples out in the Durham area, some in the Asheville area, and then soon to be in Floyd, Virginia, right north of us. When you go and see one, you will immediately know that you know, the type of interactions that happen there can be a lot deeper than what you'll experience at any type typical.
Well, let me share this, because according to literature supplied by the Co-Housing Association, in a co-housing community, you know who lives six houses down from you. You trust them enough to leave your four-year-old with them. You listen to what they have to say, even if you don't agree with them. Imagine that. And you sense that you, too, are heard. Now, these values used to go without saying. This is how kind of how I grew up in the neighborhood that I grew up in. So is this really a progressive movement, or is this a return mm-hmm. to old-fashioned values and an old-fashioned way of living?
I think it's both. I certainly grew up in a neighborhood where parents were comfortable for the kids leaving the house in the morning and coming back at dinner time during the summer and not thinking anything about it, which is a lot different than most communities are in now.
And that's because you actually get to know your neighbors. Now, what makes that happen? Obviously, if you're starting out, you've had these long discussions about what it's going to be like, what it's going to look like, where the streets are going to go, what the building materials are, what architect we're going to hire. So you have all of that. But as you come fresh into a community that's already been established, how do you break into that community? Because sometimes it's hard to do that.
Well, you have continuing lots of committees. You are running your community. Generally, co-housing communities are self-regulated. The maintenance is often done by volunteers in the community that are working on different committees. Maintaining a community takes a lot of work ongoing, and this is generally done by the community members. And one of the important things that most co-housing communities have are common meals, and that can vary. There are co-housing communities that have 6 common meals a week, and these aren't required, but many of the community members take part in them.
Right. There's also been an elaborate process laid out by decades of experience by people like Katie McCormick and Charles Durrett, who were, actually originally coined the term co-housing and brought co-housing essentially to America, to North America. Their most recent edition of Creating Co-Housing, outlines a process, and they work with forming communities to establish a strong foundation, not only physically, but also, in terms of the policies and procedures and interactions. And the whole process is what actually unites people, brings people together and forms that strong bond. And then the ongoing marketing efforts. Also, in a neighborhood, people are attracted to a certain neighborhood because of that feel of the neighborhood. It has certain amenities. It has certain, a certain feel. So that happens across the board. Charlotte is an amazing time and an amazing city right now. It's an amazing time. Growth is happening everywhere. So what this is doing is simply just saying, let's come together and create more consciously the type of neighborhood that we want to live in, the type of people that we want to grow with.
Well, you just mentioned that people are attracted to places because of what they feel like, what they look like, and quite honestly, what the neighbors feel like. Because I know that when you buy a house, if you're smart, you'll kind of spend some time in the neighborhood getting to know the people to the left and right of you before you decide that maybe you want to buy that house. Each of these housing developments, these co-housing developments, has a personality of its own, right?
Sure.
How would you describe the differences between those personalities? I mean, if people come together because they like the concept of co-housing, what makes the personality of the area different? Just the structures?
That's going to have a lot to do with it, because ultimately the community itself, they're going to be mostly similar. When you have a co-housing community where a group of people have formed it themselves, they're making decisions by consensus, they're joining together with common meals, they're helping look after one another's children, they're helping with elder care, there's a commonality in that regard that's very apparent.
I mean, you talked several times about these common meals, and you said they're not mandatory. But if you don't participate in things that become community, whether it's a meal or everybody goes out on Saturday and plays volleyball, I don't know what it is, but you don't, because that's just not your thing. Are you in the wrong place? Are you living in the wrong place? Will you be treated like you're living in the wrong place? Will you be encouraged, arm-twisted, et cetera?
No, you wouldn't be arm-twisted. Again, going to the national website, cohousing.org, there are so many anecdotal stories there. It is just an amazing website. One of the stories I recall is a blog entry that was written by a self-professed hermit who moved into cohousing and loves it. When he doesn't want to interact with people, he's in his house or off in the woods with no problem. When he does feel a little bit of inclination to be a little more social, it's just so easy for him.
Tell me why the two of you find this attractive.
I've just always been interested in community. Doing something together with other people is something I've always been attracted to, actually doing something. Going to a party and sitting around and talking is not my cup of tea. I'm an introvert, and if you look at most co-housing communities, the majority of people in them, although they're communities where people are coming together, most of those people are introverts. They feel a connection to the deep connection they can feel with one another, but are not so attracted to superficial party going
and
so forth.
Same
I would
question.
Reiterate that essentially. I'm personally attracted to being around and working with thoughtful, engaged, and more conscious individuals who are working together to actually create a better society for ourselves and not just take what's given to us, but actually co-create and what we hope to see in the world.
If this idea is intriguing to some people who have been listening to this conversation, what questions should they ask themselves about whether or not this really is for them?
I think they should investigate the website. They could investigate our Jubilee website, jubileecoho.com. They can come to the meeting Saturday.
Come and check out the Charlotte Meetup Group. There's events that were happening all the time. Come and talk to us. Call me, literally email, whatever it may be. Reach out to us on Facebook, however it may
be.
Have
a local web address?
Yes, our website is in process. You can, it's Charlotte, cohousing-charlotte.org or .com, and the meetup group as well.
And the meeting will be about this in Charlotte. Will be Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church, which is on the plaza. Myra Brisk, the initiator and coordinator of the Charlotte Housing Initiative. Walter Charnley, the first founding member of the Jubilee Co-Housing Initiative in Floyd, Virginia. And earlier, Alice Alexander, who's the executive director of the Co-Housing Association up in and also up in Durham as well. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte talks with